Please welcome A.M. Holmes. A.M., can you set up what you're going to read for us?
Yes, I'm going to read an excerpt from the first chapter of my novel, Music for Torching. It's a part that comes towards the end of the first chapter, and I would say it's a story of a marriage, of the familiar gone awry. Sunday, the day of rest. Elaine goes from room to room thinking, round and round, faster and faster, upstairs and downstairs. She makes mental notes, what's missing, absent, in need of attention. She makes notes until she feels sick, then she goes downstairs and opens the refrigerator to get a drink. The bulb blows while she's trying to decide what she wants. It is enough, more than enough. She goes outside and sits on the steps. She can't go back in the house. She can't go in the house again. She sits on the steps. The air is thick. A neighbor whose son died long ago comes collecting for the Kidney Foundation. It's too soon for this, he tells her, gesturing to the invisible air. Hot, humid, and it's only the beginning of June. Her son Daniel comes out of the house. Elaine had forgotten he was home. I'm bored, he says, and there's nothing to eat. Go to your friend Willie's, she says. You'll get there just in time for lunch. Fine, he says defiantly, I will. Elaine sits on the steps all day. She sits until Daniel comes home. Daniel drags a beach chair out of the garage and sets it up in the backyard for her. She lies in the yard until Paul and Sammy return. She hears the car door slam. Paul goes into the house and makes himself a drink. You want one? He yells out the kitchen window. Please, she says. He comes out into the yard, drinks in hands. He takes off his shoes and socks. He wiggles his feet in the grass. I can't cook dinner, she says. I just can't do it. We'll grill, Paul says. We'll just slap everything on the grill. She doesn't say any more. It's Sunday night, a holiday weekend, the beginning of summer. They have their drinks, and they have more drinks. There is the bleating bellow of mothers calling their children home, echoing up and down the street. Wendy, Jonathan, Danielle, Michael, dinner's ready. Elaine's stomach growls. She hasn't eaten since breakfast. Paul sets up the grill. A little too close to the house, Elaine thinks, but she doesn't say anything. He lights the coals. I don't think you realize what I'm saying, Elaine says. I can't do it anymore. What do you want to do? Paul asks. Where are the children? In the front yard. Elaine and Paul are silent, listening for Sammy and Daniel's game. The static of the children's walkie-talkies cuts through the air. What are you wearing? Daniel squawks. Blue shorts, Sammy squawks back. What color are your socks? Mine are red, Sammy says. And then, as if they know their parents are listening, the children begin beeping each other with the Morse code button, talking an unintelligible language of longs and shorts, dots and dashes. Paul picks up the can of charcoal starter fluid and squirts it against the house. Is this what you want? He asks. Elaine sucks in her breath. She can't tell if Paul is joking or not. Tell me, he says, emptying the can against the house, spraying a swath over the grass, a line that leads straight to the grill. You have to tell me. I don't know, Elaine says. The briquettes are almost ready. The coals are dead white, red-edged, glowing. Elaine goes to Paul. She puts her hand around Paul's waist. She balances herself and then raises her leg, her foot, her toe, and taps her toe against the leg of the grill. Harder, Paul says. Elaine pulls her leg back and kicks the grill. The coals fly up and out. The grill tips over. Everything sputters and smokes for a minute, and then slowly the fire builds up from the ground, the grass, and moves towards the house. They stand watching as fire creeps up the back wall of the house. Wordless, each wonders if it is a game, a dare to see who will run for the garden hose. As the fire builds, their nervousness and excitement grow. Elaine begins to laugh and then stops herself, pinching her cheeks together. In the early evening light, the blue flame is nearly invisible. Fire seeps into a crack in the wall. A line of white smoke rises. Elaine wishes she could hurry it, wishes she could be sure. Paul leans on Elaine and puts his shoes and socks back on. Get the kids and get in the car, he says. Elaine walks away, turning back to see Paul blowing on the fire, fanning it with his hands, encouraging the flame. We're going out for dinner, Elaine tells Sammy and Daniel. Roger, they say into their walkie-talkies. They get into the car and wait for Paul. A few minutes later, red-faced, breathless, he joins them. They drive to a nearby restaurant. The waitress fills their water glasses. Paul and Elaine smile at each other. "I'll have the steak," Paul tells the waitress, "and the baked potato with sour cream." "The fat," Elaine starts to say. "I just want to live," Paul says. "Live and not worry. Is that possible?" "I'll have the same," Elaine says, closing her menu. During dinner, they hear sirens. They linger over coffee. The children eat ice cream sundaes. When the check is paid, they get back into the car and head towards home. The street is blocked off, fire engines and police cars. In the distance, they can see their house engulfed in flames, fire shooting out of the roof. In the back seat, the children are oddly silent. "Is that our house?" Daniel asks. "Yes," Paul and Elaine say. They watch for a few minutes and then worry that someone will recognize them. They drive away. They check into a motel. The children, stunned by the spectacle, go quickly and quietly to sleep. "We're awful," Elaine says, crawling into bed next to Paul. "Really bad." "We have to try harder," Paul says. "We have to be nicer to each other," Elaine says. Paul plays with the blankets, pulling them up over their heads. "We should build a fortress to protect ourselves from the world," he says. "To protect us from each other," Elaine adds. "From ourselves," Paul says, letting the blankets fall down over them. They are quiet. Paul curls up against Elaine and wraps himself around her. "What are you wearing?" he whispers in her ear.
A.M. Holmes reading from her novel, Music for Torching.